Technorama episode 537, A Whimsical Tale of Wonder.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Quick, I need access to your fax machine and payphone.
Over there, in the media corner.
I need a quarter.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here, your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
What kind of payphone takes Bitcoin?
One that never existed.
That's what I'm going to invent then. Hey, welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, thank you. You have no idea what you're in for. Or maybe
brace
you
yourself.
Do.
Yes. Brace yourself.
This is one of the longest running podcasts on the internet, if you can believe that.
I know. It's not that we think we're worthy of keeping going. It's just we don't know when to stop.
We can't stop. It's an addiction. It truly is. If you're returning, you know what this is all about. This is just an hour or so of pure fun. These are news stories that nobody else seems to cover except us. Some are educational, some are fun, some are just plain nonsense, and we see where the conversation takes it. I am Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona, in one half of the Binary Studio, and joining me as always is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing really good.
And you must be the other half of the Binary Studio.
Yes, I am. I'm the one.
Have you had a good week?
Yeah, it was pretty good. I'll go through this real quick. I don't know if everybody's probably heard me talk about it before, but you know, I'm a scout leader and my son's been in scouts for a long time.
Yeah. Thank you very much, by the way.
Yeah. Well, I try. Anyway, this last weekend, it's not the end of the line, but he completed his Eagle project this weekend.
All right.
Which was
congratulations,
a big deal.
Harrison.
Yeah. So we got a little bit of more merit badge, work to go through, but he is set up to get his Eagle. All he's gonna do is finish a few more merit badges and he's good to go. So you don't have to do the Eagle project to at the end. You can do it at any time, but so we're set up. We renovated some little campfire sites at a camp not far from here, so the day campers, I mean not day campers, but the campers that stay there, they teach them how to do Dutch oven cooking. And some of the campsites we built, or four of them, we built Dutch oven tables.
Is that where you fart and pull the covers over?
That's not the kind of Dutch oven I'm talking about, Chuck. But yeah, so we set up the tables so they didn't have, they were doing it on the ground. So now they got these cinder block things they can, so it worked out pretty good. Had a good turnout and
awesome.
Yeah, finished it up.
You're a good dad.
He did it. Actually, that's the thing about the Eagle Project.
He said, move these boards over there. That's the deal. Right.
No, I gave him a little advice. No, he had to do
advice.
The planning.
Lift with your legs, boy.
No, he had to. It's an Eagle project. He has to do the planning and everything. And I had somebody else even said, hey, you know, Harrison, you might want to think about this, you know, when they're standing or doing this. And I didn't stay out of it. It's his. It's all his thing.
Very cool. All right. Yeah. So he organized it and had other people doing the labor. Is that how it goes?
Yeah, he's managing it.
Okay, because your picture showed a lot of people in there, and I think Harrison was the tallest, so the tallest one wins.
Well, he was standing on the last Dutch oven table we made. But no, he's supposed to be managing it, you know, and you know how managers... This is the advice I told him. I said, you're managing this project. You shouldn't be doing much, if any, of the work. You give everybody the tools, give them the instruction and the vision, and you manage it. Just make sure everybody's doing their jobs.
Yeah, and tell them what to do, not how to do it.
Yeah. So, and he did for the most part. It took a little bit to get his legs under him, but I said, speak to people confidently, you know, don't have to, you know, berate somebody, but just be confident about it, say what you want and have them do it. That's it. So it worked out. It worked out pretty good.
Good, good. Oh, I've uploaded more videos to YouTube this week than I've ever done in my life before. all put together.
This is part of the managing thing. You should be delegating, not
I
doing
should
it,
be, so. Except this is one of those things where it needs the technical finesse of someone who's got experience doing this. I had 5 hard drives full of fun. These are videos from our conference that we had in May, and we had 4 or 5 rooms that were being recorded. They were recording whatever was on the screen, not any camera work being done. So whatever PowerPoint or demo was being done on the computer, they would record that, they'd throw the audio in there, and then they'd send me an MOV file of each one of those. Well,
okay.
They also had, they did have one where you and Dave Slusher and I did our presentation over the 3-day course. That was in the developer theater. And unfortunately, all the videos on the developer theater hard drive had no audio anywhere. So that was a bit disappointing.
Wow. So, but hey, maybe that was an improvement.
we were going to do bad lip reading for that.
Right.
Hey, Craig, you want some chicken?
Yeah.
Chicken.
I got beat up on the playground.
Right. My grandfather's fish.
I like mud pies.
Anybody find my keys? Anybody find my keys? we were thinking about that, but we didn't. The rest of them were an amalgam of some starting late, some having no audio, but there were audio other tracks that I had to sync up. Some were 2, 3, or 4 sessions all glued together that I had to tease out and edit out. And
Watching all of them?
I didn't watch them front to back, but I made sure that they were, the front was in quality and the back was in quality and the audio was sufficiently leveled all the way through. And I went, that's fine, let's go. And then I export them.
Were there some that you went, oh, I'm going to watch this?
Oh, yes. Quite a few of them. In fact, Dave Slusher and Josh Narius, I didn't get to see theirs done live. So I do want to watch many of these recordings later because, you know, you and I were very busy at this conference. We didn't have a chance to go to any of these sessions. So this is our chance to relive some of that.
Oh, they had sessions there?
Yeah. There was a conference going on.
Huh? Right.
So it was a lot of work. I've still got 1 hard drive left with about 12 videos on it. And then I think I'm done. And then Friday afternoon, I get this message. Oh, can you also upload these 24 shorter videos? They're about 6 minutes each.
So, we're deleting this channel. Is that okay with you?
No, that's not. So that was a fun week. And along with that, I also got some new direction on what I do at work. I've been handed a new program. So this weekend, I've been dreaming and scheming of creative ways. And it's fun when you get a mission, when you get a goal like that, and they give you free license to do whatever you want and say, go think of some creative ways to execute this. My brain starts looking for inspiration in anything and everything. I was looking at our grocery receipt this morning and came up with an idea. Our grocery store has reward points, and you can redeem them for fuel. So, you know, if you spend so much money at the grocery store, you get 10 cents off a gallon, or 20 cents or 30 cents. I'm thinking, I could do that into a development program. You know, if people make an app, they get some kind of badge or maybe a discount for next year's conference. I'm just
if you handle out. If you handle so many incidents, then you get a token.
No, this isn't for the people handling the incidents. This is for the people that I want to learn how to build applications.
Oh, okay.
And then if they you know, add in, say, flow designer, they get some extra points. And if they add in notifications, they get some extra points. You know, just all these different pieces and parts that we've got. It's a lot like going to Home Depot, where you've got lots of parts and eventually you could build a home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
if you were creative at it. Sure. Anyway, but I didn't want to get, we've been
hey, it's our podcast. It's our, we can do it as we want.
I do want to take a minute and give a shout out to Jolene, who was my massage therapist yesterday. And you're saying, Chuck, what does this have to do with Technorama?
She did a great job on the shoulders.
Oh, I feel great today. I can reach all over this mixer. Yeah, no, nothing like that. It was Jolene. You were there with me a few weeks ago in May, and you turn in your money and your sign-up sheet at the front desk, and then you go over to a break room just off to the left. And then the therapist meets you there. They get their assignment of who's going to work on what client.
Right.
And this rather tall woman walked in, and she said, oh, I like your shirt. I was wearing my Phoenix Comic-Con shirt that says, Discover Your Inner Geek, which sounds an awful lot like our old slogan, but...
not your Chuck Con shirt.
No. And she said, "Oh, do you go to Comic-Con?" And I said, "Yeah." She said, "Well, I've helped out there a number of times and do Renaissance Fair cosplay and whatnot." And then she goes and gets her assignment and doesn't know who's who, because there's about half a dozen people in the room now because they're lining up after me. She says, "Chuck T." And I said, "That's me." She goes, "Oh my gosh, what are the odds?" We do the pre-screening. Have you ever had a massage before? Anything you wanted me to work on? Anything you want me to stay away from? That kind of thing. And then you go into that room with all the little curtains that make cubicles for them to work on. We go through the maze and she says, "Check this out. I'm in booth number 42. I started laughing. There was nobody else in there. I went, "So that's too cool." And then when she did a fine massage, got done later, she says, "Okay, how do you feel?" And showed me a couple of stretches that I can use to loosen up my shoulders. And as I was leaving, I said, "So long and thanks for all the fish."
Yeah.
So we had a good laugh and I wanted to give her a shout out. That was just a whole lot of fun. We also had a question last week. Oh my goodness. This was probably one of our most popular responses.
Here's the brace yourself part of the show.
Well, we're not going to cover all of them. We're going to pick out some of our favorites. Our question last week was, if money were no object, what's the one feature you would want in your dream house? You would want your dream house to have. And we got, what is it? Probably about 50 responses. It's fun and all seeing different people in your lives conversing on one subject in Facebook. I've got people from high school. I got people from the karate school. I got people from my wedding. I've got people from my last job. I got people from my current job. I got people from podcasting. It's great. Thank you very much for everybody who responded to this.
You know what? I love it when I have to click few previous comments, because there's a lot of them.
Yes, and even more after this. I'm going to start out with Clinton Albert. He says, a dedicated recording studio with proper soundproofing. And Grant Pachoco says, ditto. And I look around going, check.
Yeah, check. Done.
What were some of your favorites?
Well, let's see. An elevator.
Yes, and that wasn't just for, you know, cool factor or greedy factor. Apparently his wife could really benefit from this.
Yep. Stacy Bailey, a coworker, she said a rotunda.
Wait, aren't we both getting a little rotunda? No, you're getting less rotunda.
What? Yeah, I'm getting less rotunda.
You're losing weight.
That's right. A private beach, that's also a good one.
Jeff Deneau says an ocean. Now, knowing Jeff Deneau, he was my karate instructor for years and years. I should properly refer to him as Mr. Deneau. And he said, knowing him, he would need not only an ocean, but some fine coral reefs and maybe some shipwrecks to go with it. Because an ocean in and of itself isn't going to do you any fun. He is an avid scuba diver.
I put on there an endless beer fountain. I don't know what that would look like.
Ask for that? Scott Tyler said jet engines on his, and I said, "We'll just move closer to the airport."
Oh, here you go. Mark Capuccio said, "And an ATM restocked by the Federal Reserve." Wait, that would be my money. Wait a minute.
Right, exactly. I'm not sure. You'd still have to take it out of your account. I would say, you know, an open access one. Weber Baker says, "What are those revolving clothes racks in the closet like dry cleaners have? Do you know how many times I thought of that and ways I could make one?" I said, "That would be so cool." Of course, you'd have to have it go out to like an external storage or upstairs or something the way they
do. Well, what if you had the shirts turned so they were flat on the back end and they came around?
Well, then you could just, you know, you could go on your mobile device and say, "This is what I'm going to wear today." And go, shoo, okay, take shirt number 48 and shoo, pants number 127, shoo, and here's your tie.
Just like you used to do Granimals?
Yes, Granimals. I'm going to wear giraffes today. You know, I thought of that too for adults, since men have less fashion sense than women. You could have, it wouldn't be animals though, it would be
Kardashians.
No, it'd be more like home improvement things. So let's see.
I'm wearing hammers today.
Right. Well, the hammer would go with the nails. The hammer does not go with pop rivets.
Hey, I've got a date tonight. I'm going with the hammer and nails.
The pipe cutter goes with anything plumbing. You know, so you have a tool that goes with some sort of supply.
Oh,
and you match those up.
Going to the doctor, get the plumbing one.
No.
Maybe.
No. Yeah. Wait, are these my catheter pants? We have a link in our show notes if you want to follow through with this, or if you haven't seen this thread.
Oh, wait. It is. I'll give JT Shea a shout out. He said, full of happy family and friends.
Oh, that's nice. Chris Christensen says, a flying car in the garage. I would want it flying outside the garage.
I want it outside.
You don't want it flying around inside the garage.
On the landing pad.
I know what he's talking about. John Clifford wants a photography studio. Charlotte Kennedy just puts in a picture of what looks like a Starship Enterprise in-home movie theater with chairs.
It does.
That would be cool. An IMAX. Oh. Yeah, I think more than one person went on the movie theater thing.
You know what? I'm going to take all these suggestions and make one big, awesome house.
With an ocean. And a patio that extends down to the beach with a boat.
Hey, Kim, I got a list of things to do to the house. Check it out.
And a helicopter pad and a helicopter and a stripper pole.
I would go for the bat pole, but I don't know.
You could always repurpose it as a fireman's pole so you can come down to breakfast faster.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Mad Marv did. He took the time to email in and said he would like his dream house to have a holodeck.
There you go.
Yeah.
Someone else had a TARDIS, and I think that solves a multitude of other problems.
What if a holodeck inside a TARDIS?
Or TARDIS inside the holodeck. It just keeps hitting the walls. Just keeps you... You're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
There's a comic strip in there somewhere. All right, should we do the history thing?
We shall.
All right, let's play the music. Where is it? It's this one. On this day in history for July 4th, 2018, this is the 185th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 180 days remaining in 2018. That means it adds up to 365 like it should. Whew, checksum accomplished. It was on this date in 1054 that a supernova called SN 1054, named after the year it was discovered, of course, is seen by Chinese Song Dynasty Arab and possibly American observers near the star Zeta Tauri. For several months, it remained bright enough to be seen even during the day. Its remnants, of course, formed the Crab Nebula.
Nice. And the Louisiana Purchase is announced to the American people on this date in 1803. I wonder how long it took for that news to disseminate.
Hey, guess what we're buying on Amazon?
2 years later. What?
Napoleon listed it on eBay.
Yeah, right.
It was also on this date in 1817 that in Rome, New York, construction on the Erie Canal begins.
On July 4th, 1837, Grand Junction Railway, the first long-distance railway, opens between Birmingham and Liverpool.
I love that band, Grand Junction Railway.
Yeah, they were awesome in the 70s.
It was on this date in 1845 that Henry David Thoreau moves into a small cabin on Walden Pond in Concord, Massachusetts. Thoreau's account of his 2 years there, Walden, will become a touchstone of the environmental movement.
I kept thinking on Golden Pond when you said
that's
that.
That's kind of what I was thinking, too, when I read it first.
It was also on this date in 1855, the first edition of Walt Whitman's book of poems, Leaves of Grass, is published in Brooklyn.
And Grass of Leaves.
And wait, only in Brooklyn?
On July 4th, 1862, Lewis Carroll tells Alice Liddell, or is it Little? I'm going to go with Liddell, like Little. Chuck Liddell.
There's two Ds.
The MMA guy. A story that would grow into Alice's Adventures in Wonderland and its sequels.
Also today in 1886, the first scheduled Canadian transcontinental train arrives in Port Moody, British Columbia.
Also on July 14th, 1892, Western Samoa changes the international dateline.
Put it over there, 20 feet to the right.
Causing Monday, July 4th, to occur twice, resulting in the only year with 367 days.
Okay. It was also 126 years ago today, the first double-deck streetcar service was inaugurated in San Diego, California.
And it was on this date in 1914 that the funeral of Archduke Franz Ferdinand, you know what he was the start of, right? World War One.
Yep.
And he and his wife, Sophie, it took place in Vienna 6 days after their assassination in Sarajevo.
Also today in 1927, the first flight of the Lockheed Vega
And it was on this date in 1934 that Leo Szilard, there we go, now the fun begins, patents the chain reaction design that would later be used in the atomic bomb.
Hmm. Also on July 4th, 1951, William Shockley announced the invention of the junction transistor.
Eureka! I've discovered. Sure. Anyway. 57 years ago today, on its maiden voyage, the Soviet nuclear-powered submarine K-19 suffers a complete loss of coolant to its reactor. The crew were able to effect repairs, but 22 of them die of radiation poisoning over the following 2 years.
Wow. It was also on this date in 1997 that NASA's Pathfinder space probe lands on the surface of Mars.
And Matt Damon found it years later.
Yeah, he did.
Also in 1998, Japan launches the Nozomi probe to Mars, joining the United States and Russia as a space-exploring nation.
It was 13 years ago today that the Deep Impact Collider hits the comet Tempel 1 in a successful collision.
Hopefully they had insurance and for the collision insurance, and there's no fault of Tempel 1.
Right.
On July 4th, 2012, the discovery of particles consistent with the Higgs boson at the Large Hadron Collider is announced at CERN. Happy birthday goes out on this date too. Good grief. French inventor, best known as the pioneer in balloon flight, Jean-Pierre Blanchard, born on this date in 1753.
George Everest, the Welsh geographer and surveyor, was born 228 years ago today.
You know, what was named after George Everest, right?
I guess Mount Everest.
And the ice cream shop. The ice cream shop didn't do so good.
Okay.
They only sold yellow snow cones. All right, that was just a bad reference. American novelist and short story writer Nathaniel Hawthorne was born 214 years ago today.
And born July 4th, 1816, American businessman founded the Canadian Club Whiskey, Hiram Walker.
Is he Johnny Walker's brother?
Yes.
James Anthony Bailey, the American circus ringmaster and co-founder of Ringling Barnum and Brothers Bailey and Bart. That circus thing that has a really long name was born 171 years ago today.
And American astronomer and academic Henrietta Swan Leavitt is born on this date in 1868.
U.S. Grant III, the American general, was born 137 years ago.
And American chemist and meteorologist Vincent Schaefer was born on this date in 1906.
American lawyer, journalist, and author Geraldo Rivera is 75.
Wow, he looks pretty good for 75. Also turning 57 today is English-American video game designer, created the Ultima series, Richard Garriott.
Woo, that's the way it was on this day, July 4th, 2018. Whew, thought we were going to run out. There was a lot of them. But wait, there's listener birthdays coming. July 4th is Mike McBride. July 6th, Peter from Sweden, who is now 36. Trampas Whiteman, a.k.a. Dragon Helm, is on the 8th, along with Mark Lee. Stardate minus 351519.0. Now, how do you know that? There must be an online Stardate calculator.
Is that before they started keeping track of Stardates?
I think so. We haven't got to the Stardate epoch yet.
Yeah, that's right.
Alan Ralph, a.k.a. Mon Templar, was also born on the 8th. And our good friend, longtime listener, and fellow Friends in Tech member, Kevin Devon is on the 10th.
Devon.
Yes.
Yeah, the Devon.
Kevin Devon was not born on 7/11. He was born on 7/10.
That's a missed opportunity.
Hold it, honey. Hold it just a few more hours. Kill you.
That would just be hilarious. I would probably file a court thing to change my birthday to 11th.
I don't think you can do that.
I don't know if you can either, probably not.
That brings up our question at the end of the show, which I'm going to get to in just a little bit. But first, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back after we hear some other stuff. We'll be back with the news and Remember When and Geek Library. So hang on. We'll be right back.
Geek Thoughts.
A computer's attention span is only as long as its power cord.
Greetings, programs
and applications.
I'm Ben,
and I am Keith, and we are
The Two Gay Geeks. We are the nerds behind TG Geeks Webcast,
where we talk about sci-fi,
comics,
film,
horror,
genre.
You name it, we talk about it.
We release an episode every Monday morning at 6 a.m. Eastern.
You can find us on iTunes, Blueberry, Spreaker, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio.
Also, look us up on YouTube. And of course,
we can be found at tggeeks.com, where you can find not only our webcast,
but articles about other geeky goodness.
So come along for the wildest ride in the potosphere.
Did you just say potosphere?
This is Douglas E. Welch of Career Opportunities, the High-Tech Career Handbook, and you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
Haven't heard that one in a while.
I know, right? Wow. I was just wondering, is he still doing Career Opportunities?
I think he's doing several things still. Career Opportunities, the Gardener's Handbook, what do you call it?
Yeah, I see that all the time.
Gardener Guide, and one other. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, Career Op fell off my podcasting list a long time ago. I should see if it's still there.
We invite you to go listen to Ben and Keith as well over at tggeeks.com. Let's say the news comes up next. What's our first one? Oh, bad news. We have to do a bad news.
Yes.
Bad news, fancy men.
I'm going to leave you with the bad news first. So,
I thought we should talk about this a little bit because, yeah. Even though it happened before, I mean, it's kind of old news at this point, but Harlan Ellison, the provocative sci-fi writer of Star Trek, A Boy and His Dog, he dies at 84. And he's, I'll just read part of the article here. Speculative fiction writer Harlan Ellison, who penned short stories, novellas, and criticisms, contributed to TV series including The Outer Limits, Star Trek, Babylon 5, and won a notable copyright infringement suit against ABC and Paramount, and a settlement in a similar suit over The Terminator. He passed away, and he was 84. Christine Valdada tweeted out that Ellison's wife, Susan, had asked her to announce that he had died in his sleep on Thursday of last week before we actually recorded the show. And her tweet is in the in the article. The prolific but cantankerous author famously penned the Star Trek episode City on the Edge of Forever, in which Kirk and Spock must go back in time to the Depression era America to put Earth history back on its rightful course, a goal that for Kirk means sacrificing the woman he loves, played by Joan Collins. The final script was rewritten by Star Trek staffers, leaving Ellison unhappy. I didn't realize that.
No, I didn't either. I mean, that is one of the best. So I'd be curious to see what the original script looked like.
So in his 1995 book, The City on the Edge of Forever, the original teleplay that became the classic Star Trek episode, contained two drafts by Ellison. The author was still steaming over the experience more than four decades after the episode originally aired. And in 2009, Ellison sued CBS and Paramount Television, seeking revenue from merchandising and other sources and blah, 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 blah. So, wow. That was interesting. But yeah, it goes on to talk about some of his other stuff about the Terminator, the Outer Limits, and Soldier. So I would say this is a great loss because I remember on CNET. This is back when CNET was doing like these little video, these shows on the Sci-Fi Channel on Sunday mornings. And I remember he would come on and do an editorial on one of the shows. I'm trying to remember which one it was. And I loved it because he would work himself up to be angry about anything. But it was fun to watch.
I pulled up his Wikipedia page and I'm looking at the Star Trek section. It says Ellison repeatedly criticized how Star Trek creator and producer Gene Roddenberry and others rewrote his original script for the 67 episode The City on the Edge of Forever. Despite his objections, Ellison kept his own name on the shooting script instead of using Cordwainer Bird to indicate displeasure. Ellison's original script was first published in the 1976 anthology Six Science Fiction Plays, edited by Roger Elwood. Ellison also novelized the story at the time for the Star Trek photo novel series. In 1995, Borderlands Press published, hang on, I hovered over something and it got in the way, published The City on the Edge of Forever with nearly 300 pages comprising an essay by Ellison, four versions of the teleplay, and eight afterwards contributed by other parties. He greatly expanded the introduction of the paperback edition, in which he explained what he called a fatally inept treatment. Wow. Both versions of the script won awards. Ellison's original script won the 1968 Writers Guild Award for Best Episodic Drama.
Well, there was some drama in there.
In television, while the shooting script won 1968 Hugo Award for Best Dramatic Presentation. On March 13, 2009, Ellison sued CBS Paramount Television seeking payment of 25% of net receipts for merchandising, publishing, and other income from the episode since 1967. The suit also names the Writers Guild of America for allegedly failing to act on Ellison's behalf. On October 23, 2009, Variety magazine reported that the settlement had been reached. Interesting. Wow. Mm. He wrote a lot of other stuff. I mean, it's crazy. If you go to his page, he's... he didn't write iRobot.
No.
Shortly after the release of Star Wars in 77, Ben Roberts contacted Ellison to develop a script based on Isaac Asimov's iRobot short story collection for Warner Brothers. In a meeting, the head of production, Robert Shapiro, Ellison concluded that Shapiro was commenting on the script without having read it and accused him of having the intellectual and cranial capacity of an artichoke. Sounds like you're a good creative guy.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Well, I mean, some of those stories are pretty cool, but yeah, he'll be certainly missed for sure.
Alrighty, we have another bit of bad news.
Yeah,
Osimo, the Honda robot. we got a headline that we couldn't pass up. R.I.P. Osimo, you useless robotic Honda ad.
Yeah.
Honda just announced that it will cease development of Osimo, which we were just talking about Isaac Asimov. There's a theory that Osimo is Asimov, you know, without the V.
Right.
Then if there were five generations, would he be Osimo 5? Ah, ooh. The super cute humanoid that tours the world in the name of stunt marketing. Osimo was 18 years old. Osimo once heralded the future of robotics when not even old enough to buy a beer, but it was always happy to help you sell you a Honda automobile. Don't get me wrong, Osimo is awesome. The bubble-headed droid has been around as long as the 21st century, and it always felt like a glimpse of the future. When robot assistants would walk to the kitchen and make us cheeseburgers. Sadly, this is a future that will likely never materialize the way that your younger mind may have imagined it at the turn of the century. Because Honda, primarily a car and motorcycle company, was never really interested in making Osimo available to the public. Boo. Osimo was always a marketing stunt. Honda's logo was emblazoned across Osimo's chest and shoulders like something out of a NASCAR race.
Right.
This always bugged me, and over time I came to disdain Honda for letting its badass bipedal robot seem like nothing more than a walking ad. Osimo is an acronym for Advanced Step in Innovative Mobility, a vague expression of inconclusive innovation if I've ever seen one. Standing just 4 feet tall and weighing 119 pounds, Osimo is described as the world's most advanced humanoid robot. Osimo is the one... Osimo is the one writing that description, by the way.
Yeah, right. I thought Osimo was pretty cool, especially at first when you start seeing it going up and down the stairs and stuff. And it was really like the first robot you saw bipedal, walking up and down the steps and stuff. I thought it was really neat. But yeah, you didn't do much.
I mean, sensing a childhood cosplay idea. You have to get that walk down just right, that slow kind of cadence that Osimo has.
Yeah, where your knees are kind of bent, but you're
right.
And then you turn around in a circle.
Yeah. But you have to do it step.
One. Yeah, that's right.
Because he has no hips.
No. But it's funny to take something like that, and I wonder how much development they were doing on it actually, because Then you look at like the Boston Dynamics, you know, and it's got they got robots doing backflips and, you know, running, jumping hurdles and stuff, and
the scary dog about, bot.
Yeah, I'm just give that robot a gun and we got problems.
Well, then you have Black Mirror, which is walking around with a knife for a front leg. They did a great job on that show, by the way. I can't wait to see more. Have you watched Black Mirror on Netflix?
I haven't finished them, but yeah, I'll
watch Mirror. Watch season 3.
Okay.
It's awesome.
All right.
It's awesome-o.
It's awesome. Hey, speaking of watching stuff.
Yes.
No, I'm going to send us on a little tangent.
Was that a segue to the next article, or was this a rabbit trail?
No, it's a rabbit trail.
Okay.
All right. So I've actually started watching Stargate for the first time.
Which Stargate?
I started off with the movie.
Okay.
And it's okay. You know, I wouldn't say it's groundbreaking, you know.
Yeah.
But I like it pretty good. Did you watch any of the Stargate stuff?
I watched the 2 seasons of Stargate SGU, Stargate Universe. I enjoyed that. And I tried watching a couple of the earlier ones. I think it was Atlantis or something. I obviously, it was one of those shows you can't just jump in the middle of.
Right.
But I also noticed Babylon 5 is now available on Amazon Prime.
Yes, I did.
That has been really hard to find up until that. I was surprised. So I can continue now that I finished season 1 on other means of watching TV.
Oh, you only seen season 1?
Yeah, and everybody says, well, that's season 2 is where it really starts to get good. So I've been eagerly awaiting it to return to somewhere.
It's like TNG. You know, you get past the first season and it starts to pick up steam.
Well, yeah, and there's an actual storyline to it.
Well, all of them are. How many shows have had that same cadence? It's like, okay, it takes them about a season or two to really get legs under them.
Yeah. Not Star Trek Discovery. They came out swinging. Not Westworld. Westworld season 1 was good. I haven't seen season 2. But yeah, there's a lot of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially Star Trek.
Not Firefly. Too soon?
Yes. I'm never giving up, man. I always wear my brown coat.
Yeah, season 1 of Firefly was just the warm up. Wait till you see season 2.
Yeah, I'm waiting.
All right, we have one other article that is. You take this. This is where we would need Mr. Menengay.
Yeah, and I think this is. I think it's actually gone up, but I will read this article in the past tense. This is from over at Slashdot. A robot with true artificial intelligence is about to invade space. I'm sorry. That first
line. Are they sending Osimo up there?
Yeah, that's right. He quit Earth.
That's it. I'm out. So long and thanks for all the fish.
He got a new job at SpaceX and it's
twice in one show.
Yeah. So the large round plastic robot, see, they're already describing him, is part of SpaceX's latest supply delivery to the International Space Station. Friday's pre-dawn liftoff also includes 2 sets of genetically identical female mice, 20 mousetronauts.
Mousetronauts. Someone's struggling to come up with that word.
Yeah, where they'll pick up where NASA's identical twin brother astronauts left off a few years ago. Super caffeinated coffee is also flying up. Hey, remember I predicted the Starbucks in space. This is it.
They're not selling it. They're just sending it up with them.
That's it, man. I'm telling you. I am on it. Like, I'm a regular Nostradamus.
Yeah.
As intriguing as identical space siblings and turbocharged space coffee may be, this the German robot named Simon, with a C, pronounced Simon.
Simon.
After the genius doctor in science fiction's Captain Future, stealing the show. Like HAL, the autonomous Simon, is an acronym. It stands for Crew Interactive Mobile Companion.
Of course, it's an acronym because it's NASA. We have to have acronyms.
Yeah. Or actually, SpaceX.
SpaceX. Sorry, they picked up where NASA had left off.
Yeah, its AI brain is courtesy of IBM. German astronomer Alexander Gerst who arrived at the orbiting lab a month ago, will introduce Simon to space life during the three one-hour session. Yeah, I was reading Gilligan's Island in there somehow. Already savvy about Gerst science experiments, the self-propelling Simon will float at the astronaut's side and help when asked when research procedures. To get Simon's attention, Gerst will just have to say, "Okay, Simon." Just kidding.
Yeah. And Simon responds, "Doot, doot, doot, yeah. doot."
So yeah, that's right.
It's made up of the old kids' game. Right. Yeah. Was that red, blue, red? Oh, you know, I think Google made Simon. Look at the colors. Tell me different.
So here you go. So to get Simon's attention, Gerst will just need to call it by its name. Their common language will be English, and the official language of the International Space Station.
Interesting.
I would like to see a video of Gerst.
Robots in space.
Simon. Oh, there it is. Actually, if you click through, there's a picture of the link. Not necessarily a video, but it looks like an old Apple iMac with a picture on a face on it.
What? I gotta find the link you just clicked on.
He's got a little smug look on his face.
Is that the
I know
first
all
link, the ISS link?
Yeah, it says part of the space SpaceX's latest. Yeah.
Got to wait for the rest of the stuff to finish loading before I can click through. Yeah. What's up with
it
that?
It looks like the old bubblegum iMac with the smug look on its face. Hey, wait. Actually, it looks like the old Mac face.
That's kind of creepy in a way.
You see it?
Yeah, it's a sphere with one side chopped off and a flat screen put on it.
Hey, I'm calling shenanigans because all those guys look like they're in gravity.
They aren't gravity. This is a mock-up. They have an ISS mock-up on the ground, you know.
Yeah.
So they can work out how things fit together when there's problems.
So I wonder if this is a stem from Watson or something like that.
Don't know. What do you say we give a shout out to whoever joined us live Sunday night at 9:30 Eastern time on Facebook?
Actually, I only see a few people in here.
I've got Everett Thompson was here for a little while. Mike Perico, old high school friend, joined. Scott Tyler was here. His daughter, Courtney, who's getting married this fall.
You know what? No, I should see.
Mark Trubel and Mike Stockman. What do you got?
Facebook is weird on this live view. I can't. It's hard to follow who's here and who's watching. And
I agree.
I don't like it.
I don't either. Facebook.
No, sir. I don't like it.
Be a little more transparent. If you want to join us, you can see this show live Sunday nights at 9:30 Eastern time. Like I said, join us or just subscribe to the page on Facebook and you get an alert when we go live. We also do post this back on YouTube on Monday morning. So you can watch it there if you missed it.
Facebook does not have trouble sharing data with all these other companies, much
less.
But
they don't share with the people who are, that's because we are the customer.
Maybe we should incorporate Technorama to get some data from Facebook.
No, let's not. That sounds too hard. I have other things to do.
Yeah. That's right.
Like dream up ways to get fuel points to people who write programs.
Right. That's a worthwhile project.
Should we do the Remember When stuff next?
Sure.
Thank you for joining us, by the way.
Yes, everybody. Thank you.
Yes, because we need to talk over the music. So
when you got on our Facebook Live.
We have from Gizmodo, an incredible website that shows Amsterdam's history through 700 years. No.
700,000.
History through 700,000 pieces of garbage. Rivers in cities can easily fill with heaps full of trash, lost things, and industrial waste. But if the city has been around for a while, all that garbage can tell an incredible story. Archaeologists had a unique opportunity to tell the story from the trash of Amsterdam. It began in 2003 when the city needed to drain and excavate one of its canals riverbeds for a new metro line. The digging turned up 700,000 objects covering the city's 700-year history, with some objects dating from before the establishment of the city itself. The project, Below the Surface, sounds like a good name for a band. I'm sorry, the Sam Roberts thing still lingers in this studio.
Yeah.
How has now released a book, documentary, and website where you can look at a catalog of the objects. Quote, you can see a lot of different functions in this part of the city, which you can interpret from the waste that we found. Project manager Peter Cronendonk told Gizmodo. And they've got not just coins, which I'm not sure coins would be considered garbage, but maybe buttons, pots, vases, scissors. There's all kinds of interesting things in here. I always thought that would be the best place. And this is often where archaeologists do go, is to landfills and city dumps. And imagine what they're going to find in the future from our landfills, because we make everything nice and hermetically sealed in garbage bags and sometimes double bagged so that it doesn't decompose, because the bacteria needs oxygen and we're depriving them of oxygen. So all of our garbage, including old banana peels, will be perfectly preserved for them.
Ah, well, that means they'll find all my cat poop.
Yes, they will. And they'll be able to find out what your cat had for dinner and if it suffered from cancer. That's right.
Okay.
Because in the future, everything will be smarter.
Happy spin on it.
The 700,000 objects date back as far as the stone blades from 4200 to 2000 BCE. Newer objects include pottery shards and nails from the Middle Ages, fish hooks and coins and tobacco pipes, all the way up to modern cell phones.
Modern cell phone.
There's a 4,200-year-old knife through the modern cell phone. You figure it out.
Well, one man's trash is another man's history.
It's the archaeologists that make it all tell a story. Good on them, and we thought that was interesting as well.
I want to see Indiana Jones just looking around for stole coins and pots.
Dun, 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 dun. It's a cell phone again.
Yeah, maybe he should have just gone to Amsterdam.
Nokia. Why did it have to be Nokia?
Yeah. I hate Nokias.
We got another Technorama skit brewing in our heads right now, I can tell you. Sometimes that's as far as they get. We just mention them and they're done. They never materialize.
That was the skit.
All right. We have another one from PaleoFuture at Gizmodo.com. This one was kind of interesting when I saw it. This is a futuristic solar-powered plant from 1923 that was supposed to light up the world.
And did it?
Some of the people here in the 21st century still think of solar power as futuristic, unproven technology, but solar-powered machines have been around for well over a century. In a short title called Electricity from the Sun, the October 1923 issue of Science and Invention magazine told the story of a German dream to build a gigantic lens that would be able to harness the sun and convert its energy into electricity for an entire town. And the city was made of ants, and the ants all burned up.
Oops.
The lens would be mounted on an enormous swiveling hinge that would be timed to follow the sun, much like a rotating follow the sun houses imagined in the 1950s. All right, we got another news story we can cover. The lens would concentrate the sun's energy and heat up oil, creating steam. The steam would then power a generator, and from there, electric power could be brought into the homes of the area. As far as we know, this solar power plant was never actually built in any way, but it was a fantastic dream at the time, when most people around the world still didn't have electricity in their homes. In fact, just 35% of Americans had electricity at home in the 1920s. And for rural residences, it was even lower than that. Just 3% of American farms had electricity at the start of the 1920s. But this invention was supposed to change all that, especially in rural desert areas. That'd be great in Phoenix, I can see. Maybe we can even get some air conditioning in there.
Yeah.
As you can see from the illustrations that we have on the screen, and if you click through our links on the website, you can find them there. This radical design was supposed to turn the sun into a reliable source of electricity for people around the world. I love how it's got like a big satellite dish to focus the light.
It's a big magnifying glass.
Well, one of them is a magnifying glass. There's a couple other diagrams that have it more. It looks like a parabolic dish aiming at the sun to concentrate. And that's actually very similar to what you see on a large scale out in the desert, where you see all the mirrors that are focusing on a tower. That's what they're doing. They're effectively a big parabolic dish that focuses all their light on there and heats up the stuff and makes it go. So from the 1923 issue of Science and Invention, solar motors and engines are by no means new. But here's a new form of solar electricity generating plant, which hails from Germany. It's the scheme for converting the energy of the sun's rays into electricity for operating lights and motors. Oil is heated by the sun's rays in the manner shown in the illustration. I wish I had a high-pass filter on this thing. It'd be more fun.
Just do your mouth around the middle of
the river. The heated oil through the coiled pipe in the water boiler caused steam to be generated. The steam passes through the steam engine directly connected to the electric dynamo.
I love that word.
And the dynamo is connected to the dish network.
And the electric current is distributed through the suitable switchboard for light and power purposes.
The generating apparatus shown in the illustration furnishes sufficient power and lighting current to supply a small town. The invention has the added advantage of working a few hours after the sun is set until the heat of the oil drops below the boiling point of water. Where more power is needed, of course, a battery of machines will be used and more boilers added. So that, you know, that's pretty far-flung stuff that, although not as practical as, I like the solar-powered printing press. That's called the internet now.
Yeah, right. That's it. So actually go up to the slide up a little bit. That first link you saw that said in the 1950s.
Yes.
I clicked on it and it looks like the Jetsons house. Look at that roof line.
Wow. Frank Lloyd Wright's got nothing on this guy. We'll have to show that to you.
This illustrator he missed his mark in life.
1959. They really thought something of the 1980s. We like the retro future stuff. That is a lot of fun, and encourage you to follow the links through the show notes on our site at chuckchat.com/technorama. We also thank, we got to do this because these are the, that's the ending song. I hit the wrong
button. Whoa, not yet. Yeah. Not yet.
Good thing I didn't have the volume up. Nobody heard that, right? Thank you to our patrons. This show is brought to you by you. You are wonderful people. You help offset the cost of running this show. You are going to drive Craig's OCD crazy when one more of you joins and makes this table off balance again. We have a perfect 4x4 grid, and we want your name to mess with him. Just, you know, one, two, or three more people, hey, or five.
I dare you.
Come on, you can do it over at patreon.com/technorama podcast. You could be among the people that get your name called out every week on the show, and special content. This is one of the few weeks where I actually thought up a content idea before the show.
Hey, we did.
You will. Yes. Check that document we started. Kyle Nishioka, Avner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Mike Wills, Megapodtastic, Night Gig Studios, Gary Lindros. Thank you all very much. John Clifford, Leon, John Noble. Not that John Noble. Chris MC, Alexis Duran, Saturday Morning Media, Steve Therian, Jorgis Rowan, and John Miller Jr.
Wait, that John Miller Jr.?
Donna, can I tell the story? Okay, we were at the grocery store yesterday, and she's saying, who's that that guy in that show? We're watching The Good Wife? She's watching The Good Wife and says, there's an actor in that show that was on that other show that we watched. And I'm like, well, that just included all of IMDb. No, it was that time travel show.
I think he's 6 degrees from Kevin Bacon.
It was that time travel show. I went, well, that narrows down to a quarter of IMDb.
Yeah.
I finally narrow it down, and she shows me a picture. I said, that's John Noble. And she says, oh, I knew that name sounded familiar. I said, you're sitting 2 feet away from me every week on the podcast, and we make a joke about it. That John Noble? Not that John Noble.
You should have said, no, this John Noble.
That's the John Noble we're talking about.
That John Noble?
Have we beat that to death yet?
Wait till we see him at Dragon Con.
Thanks for all the Patreon donations.
We're walking around. There, that John Noble.
Get a picture. And it'll just give him a t-shirt that says, not that John Noble.
Right.
He says, thanks, boys. What's this for? Just put it on, please.
I'll give you an extra 10 bucks. Just put it on.
Maybe we'll go with the hat.
Right.
Thank you to everybody who donates. We appreciate it very much. Special content and a shout out. And who knows, maybe at the end of the year, you get a gift or two. thank you for as much as that. Geek Library. Where's my Geek Library thing? There it is. One more story and we're out of here.
What?
I thought this was going to be a short short episode, but it's turned out really long.
Yeah, leave it to me.
That's all right. We never know if there's going to be another one.
Yeah, we don't know when to stop.
Yeah, live every day like it's your last. Live every episode like it's your last.
It's like my dad has this theory. You know, he'll be 72 in October. Him and his friend, they still run and they're active. And he said their theory about meeting people in their age group is just outliving them. So I want to go with that same theory, that same bit of advice for our podcast, and we'll just be the longest running podcast by outlasting everybody else.
Yeah, it's not the best one, but it sure lasted forever. Yeah. Like the Simpsons.
Yeah. Welcome to season 30 of Technorama.
Yeah, when we start getting the second generation of geeks, like, weren't you a teenager when you started listening and now you got teenagers of your own? Yeah, pretty much. Then it's time to quit.
Yeah.
So that'll be about 30 years. Hey, we're halfway there.
Right.
All right. This is from Geekology, and they say Crayola is coloring outside the lines by releasing a line of makeup. And the first thing that came to mind is a bunch of crayons you write on your face, like my sister did when she was little.
Well, my first thought of, and maybe it's just because of that I live in the area, but do you remember Tammy Faye Baker?
Yes. Who doesn't remember?
Heritage was literally the next town in the next town over.
Was it really that close?
Yes, it was. They put on Christmas lights and stuff. It was kind of a neat thing to see. But yes, Jim Baker and Tammy Faye lived there. And I worked at a place in the mall. And she every once in a while she would come in there. I remember her and her daughter came into the jeans shop I was working in and the makeup. Oh my God. And I kept thinking of this because I looked at, I'll tell you why, because they came out with this t-shirt says, I ran into Tammy Faye.
I was just going to say that.
At the mall. Yeah. I ran into Tammy Faye at the mall and
it splotches for the eyes of where the mascara hit and the lipstick. I ran into Tammy Faye at the mall. Look it up, kids. It's probably a picture of it on the internet somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, in 5-year-old me stomping around the house in my mom's high heels wouldn't be exciting news. I'm assuming there's a woman who wrote this.
You have something to tell us, Chuck.
Hey, do your own thing and love it, man. Be your own person. Crayola has recently released a line of makeup all available from ASOS here, including a few mascaras, blushes, highlighters, eyeshadow, lip, and face palettes, and over 50 shades of, not gray, 50 shades of lip and cheek face crayons. Prices range from $15 to $40 from what I gathered from watching a handful of early video reviews on YouTube. I am an investigative journalist. The makeup line is somewhat gimmicky and comparable, if not better quality products are available for cheaper. That's a shame because this author was half tempted to get a couple of the products for his wife. Okay, it was a man. Oh, maybe not. We don't know. Granted, she doesn't wear makeup, but sometimes when she passes out from exhaustion, I do encourage the kids to drown her with Sharpies.
You know, I remember we had some of those Crayola markers. You know, that's just,
yep.
I could have done this years ago. Just
do you remember El Marco markers?
Vaguely. Yeah, I think so.
Those were the big ones before Sharpies came along. Somewhere when we were cleaning out the house in Appleton a couple of years ago before we moved out here to Phoenix, I found one last red El Marco.
El Marco. Okay.
Look it up. They had a very distinctive...
No, it's not a mall.
Marker design.
Looking for
El Marco markers. Yeah, I'm going to find it for you. Images.google.com is my friend.
Oh, yeah, where it's got the little silhouette of the hat. Yeah. It had like a little stand on the bottom. I remember those. Yes.
El Marco. Oops. Not Elm. Marco markers.
Yeah, they got a small cap and the little what looks like a stand on the bottom.
Oh, wow. This is a good screenshot. I'm going to paste that right over your face for a second. Da, 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 da. Scroll that up. There we go. Various colors. Hello, I am El Marco.
They also, though, I think that same brand did a lot of scented ones as well.
There's a good shot of the various colors, blue and yellow. We marked so many wetsuits with those things when I was a kid. This one's a large. Keep scrubbing, L. Yeah. All right, that takes us to the end of the show. Our question this week is, if you were to change your name to a number, what number would it be? You know, like the football player who changed his name to Ocho Cinco because he was number 85 on the football team.
Right.
Yeah.
Ocho Cinco.
Well, that's one example.
42 is too easy. Let's take that one out. 42
is too easy. And you could probably guess that, you know, mine would probably be 101. That's my number. I'm sticking with it. It has nothing to do with my password anymore. Remember, I changed my Amazon password? There was a 101 in there.
Oh, okay. Well, I was close.
So
I thought I saw it too.
If you don't get back to us via email like Mad Marv did, technorama@truckchat.com, or call us on the listener line, 707-530-2428. There are some more numbers you might want to think of to change your name.
3.14.
Oh, now you're getting creative. You're going square root of negative one. Top that. I challenge you, listener. Top that.
Yeah. There's your challenge of the week.
I'll post this again on a Saturday on Facebook to get some creative input. We want to hear from you. Various ways you can get in touch with us. Go over to chuckchat.com and find out what they are. Until then, look at that. The clock says 101, and we're going to finish this show up in just another minute or so. Thank you very much for joining us live on Facebook, watching on YouTube, listening on your favorite podcast player. We appreciate that very much. And if you want to be a Patreon patron and get our other content, go over to patreon.com/technoramapodcast and find out. For as little as a dollar a show, it really, really does help us. As crazy as that sounds, that is a great help, because every once in a while we got to pay a little extra to get security cleanup on our website. We do get hacked, as low profile as we are.
Yeah.
We want to hear from you.
If you have WordPress, count on it.
Yeah, pretty much. So until next time, tell a friend about Technorama. Play it loud in the park. I don't care. Just don't get arrested on our behalf. But give us the traditional sign off of my new unlegalized name, Craig.
101. Is that trademark now?
We should have.